Hi, I'm Carl Azus for CNN10. Welcome to the show. Results from yesterday's Senate races in Georgia were still coming in when we produced today's program. You can get the latest at CNN.com, and we'll bring you up to speed on them later this week. Right now, though, geopolitical tensions involving the Middle Eastern nation of Iran are simmering. In December of 2019, militias supported by Iran made a number of attacks on American targets in the Middle East. The United States responded by launching airstrikes against Iranian militias. The U.S. government blamed protesters trained by Iran for trying to storm an American embassy in neighboring Iraq. And on January 3rd of 2020, the U.S. launched an airstrike that killed an Iranian general named Qasem Soleimani, along with several other people. The U.S. blamed General Soleimani for the deaths of hundreds of Americans and their allies and said he was planning new attacks. But Iran called the airstrike an act of terrorism and promised it would get revenge. There's another issue here as well called the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. It's also known as the Iran nuclear deal. It was a controversial agreement reached in 2015 between Iran and six other countries led by America's Obama administration. In the deal, Iran agreed to limit its nuclear program, which the other nations opposed, and they agreed to remove their sanctions on the Middle Eastern nation, which were worth billions to Iran's economy. But in 2018, America's Trump administration pulled the U.S. out of the Iranian nuclear agreement, calling it a bad deal. And Iran recently went back to enriching uranium at a higher purity, which could help the country build an illegal nuclear weapon, though Iran says its nuclear program is peaceful. The U.S. and Iran have been at odds for decades.
There's little love lost between Iran and the United States.
Well, it is now Washington's move after Iran retaliated.
Relations between the two countries have been troubled for more than half a century. But where did the conflict start? To understand that, we need to go back to the 1950s and this man, Mohammad Mossadegh. Mossadegh, who became prime minister in 1951, was key in nationalizing the country's British-controlled oil fields.
British experts were granted a concession to...
As a result, the British enlisted the US to get rid of him. In 1953, the CIA and MI6 backed a coup ousting Mossadegh, restoring instead Iran's monarch, the Shah. But the Shah became unpopular at home for his lavish spending, ostentatious lifestyle, and the torture of dissidents. That all changed in 1979. The Islamic Revolution ushered in change, forcing the Shah to flee the country. The high-ranking Shia religious leader Ayatollah Khomeini returned from exile in February to become Iran's supreme leader. Later that year, amid death to America chants, Iranian students stormed the U.S. Embassy in Tehran, taking 90 people hostage, including 66 Americans. Ultimately, all the hostages were released in a siege lasting 444 days. But the damage was done. The U.S. designated Iran a state sponsor of terrorism 3 years later. In the 1980s, Iran and Iraq became embroiled in a war. The U.S. was officially neutral, but in a bid to contain Iran, started backing Iraq and its leader Saddam Hussein. The move put the U.S. and Iran even further at odds. The tension ratcheted up toward the end of the Iran-Iraq War. In 1988, the U.S. shot down an Iranian passenger plane over Iranian territorial waters when it mistakenly identified it as a fighter jet. It killed all 290 people on board. When Iraq invaded Kuwait in 1990, the U.S. and Iran suddenly shared Saddam Hussein as a common enemy, although it did little to improve relations. U.S. sanctions against Iran accelerated under the Clinton administration. In 2002, a year before the start of the Iraq War, President Bush included Iran in what he called the Axis of Evil.
States like these and their terrorist allies constitute an axis of evil.
Due to concerns, Tehran was trying to develop nuclear weapons to threaten the U.S.
10-second trivia. Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania is home to America's first what? Pizza museum, log cabin, White House, or movie theater? The nation's first Nickelodeon or public movie theater opened in Pittsburgh in 1905. It was a hit. Nickelodeons, which only cost a nickel to get into, rapidly opened across the country, and movie theaters have been a popular part of American culture ever since. But that popularity has been knocked down by a major 1-2 punch of online movie streaming and nationwide closures because of the coronavirus pandemic. And while many theaters have reopened or are planning to in the days ahead, it's anyone's guess when or if they'll see the level of attendance they saw before their problems set in.
We had a number of films in movie theaters at the time that the world went into quarantine, and Trolls World Tour was poised, ready to come out in the movie theaters. So, you know, we had spent the majority of our marketing dollars, and we needed to figure out how to monetize the film.
When Donna Langley, chairman of Universal Pictures, made the unprecedented decision to send Trolls World Tour straight to digital, the industry was shocked.
Any idea of shortening the theatrical window with exhibition was hugely unpopular. We found ourselves between a rock and a hard place. We really had no choice.
Were there any concerns at the time about how the theaters would take it?
They were not happy. They quote-unquote boycotted the film, but it didn't really matter because there wasn't a theatrical footprint really to speak of. And, you know, it came at a time that families really needed something to do to occupy their children.
The Trolls sequel made more money for the studio in just 3 weeks of its digital release than the original did during 5 months in theaters. Universal has since made a deal with AMC to shorten the window of theater exclusivity in the future.
Why is that deal so important?
When you're marketing a movie, it's a huge expense. Right? We were waiting 90 days before that movie could come out on DVD or into the home, which meant you had to market the movie all over again. So eradicating that and being able to pull that date up to 17 days, it means that we can graft off of that first theatrical marketing blast, if you will.
Recently, CNN's parent company, Warner Media, said it would stream all of next year's movies on HBO Max at the same time they hit theaters, marking a huge shift in the industry.
Do you believe it's going to be good for theaters in the long run?
Every time we launch a movie, it's like launching a small business. And, you know, with all of this disruption and with consumers migrating to streaming and uncertainty about what it's all going to look like on the other side of this, we need to keep our distribution ecosystem healthy. And the other thing I love about it is it gives optionality to the audience. And so it just makes sense that we're bringing the film business into the modern era, and we're meeting the consumer and the audience where they are and where they want to be.
What does the future of movie theaters look like to you?
I do think that there's signs of life on the other side of the pandemic. You know, if you look to Asia, Japan and China, who are ahead of the curve in terms of COVID, their movie going, it's not back to normal numbers, but they've had some local language movies there that have done really well. I think there's probably some conversation around what movies deserve that theatrical release and what's going to get people out into the movie theater. But that was happening pre-COVID. That sort of big blockbuster movie going was the thing that was driving hordes of people globally to the movie theater. And some of the smaller movies were struggling a little bit, and particularly with the disruption of streaming. I think we're going to continue to see those trends.
Why do you believe that after this pandemic, which has rattled people to their core, that people will really come back to theaters?
When tough times, people look to the movies to take them out of their reality and to inspire them. And I think that that is going to be true more than ever on the other side of the pandemic.
There are many things rescue dogs can do. Talking is not one of them. Or is it?
You can trigger an avalanche big enough to bury you in Summit County right now.
A serious message that has gone to the dogs.
We're seeing the weakest snowpack in our state since 2012.
In Colorado, rescue workers, the humankind, are trying to get people to pay attention to their warnings about dangerous conditions. So they're using the animals and a bit of technology to get the word out. Because while heavy snow is no problem for the Siberian Husky, the American Eskimo Dog, the Alaskan Klee-Kai, or the St. Bernard, people may have something to fur. So rescuers may be barking up the right tree with these mono dogs designed to Balto people over as long as they don't hit the Malamute button. Before we leave today, we're talking about Sullivan High School. It's in another snowy place known as Chicago, Illinois. Thank you for watching. For a chance to get your school mentioned, please subscribe and leave a comment at youtube.com/CNN10. I'm Carl Azus for CNN. We'll be right back.